Welcome to the canceled, rescheduled, canceled, and rescheduled again vegetarian moms, children, breastfeeding, lactation, and pregnancy session. Yes, I do find time in my busy schedule to train residents, medical students, and other small animals. I'm here to tell you what we don't know. We used to think we knew, and now we know that we don't know about the American diet. I run serious risk in my office of looking like an absolute fanatic because I tell people I'm not sure that we should eat wheat. They know that I'm a vegetarian. They know that I promote vegetarian pregnancy, vegetarian lactation, vegetarian child rearing. They know, because they can read the paper, that you really can't eat fish safely in any quantity. Whether or not you eat a little bit of fish, or fish once a month, or fish once a week, you certainly can't eat fish regularly and consider yourself safe. And I would assume nobody in the room, well, I shouldn't assume that. I would assume nobody in the room feeds fish to their children regularly. We are very, very proud that we've removed much of the mercury from vaccination. We're very proud that we have arrived at some quantification of the amount of mercury that you can find in fish, but we don't know how much cadmium is there, and it's not on the front page of USA Today like mercury was. We don't know how much antimony is there. We're not quite sure how much manganese, magnesium, lead. We don't know how much lead we can find in fish if we really look hard. That's the bad news. The good news is the children almost always like raspberries, strawberries. They like pasta. They like beans. They like to talk about beans. Some of them even eat beans. If you look up how much protein your child needs, you can find numbers that range from about 1 gram per day per kilogram to 1 gram per day per pound. That's only about 100% difference. Okay? That lets you know that we don't know. The chairperson of the American Academy of Pediatrics Committee on Nutrition is a Dr. Krebs. Coincidentally, the chairperson of the Cattlemen's Association Committee on Women's Health is a Dr. Krebs. They wear the same shoes. The American Academy of Pediatrics and most other medical associations have economic ties to the food industry. On one notable occasion, I went to the White House to attend a WIC conference, a WIC purchasing conference. And I was there on behalf of a breast pump company. It was the last time I ever worked for a... Anyway, I was there on behalf of a breast pump company, and I was astounded at the lobbyists, the greasy lobbyists, who were at this meeting. The entire nutritional, and I use the word nutritional advisedly, the entire nutritional agenda in most Western countries, in most developed countries, is economically motivated. If anybody ever talked about how bad it is to eat cheese or to drink milk on a regular basis, we would have a lot of unemployed cows. Unemployed cows are mean people. They still poop a lot and follow the waterways. They're mean people. It's not their fault. We've got too many of them. During pregnancy, women need protein, a lot of protein. Long time ago, an excellent male doc wrote that women should take in 100 grams of protein each day during their pregnancy. This was an article, a book, clearly written by a doctor who had never thrown up 82 days in a row. 100 grams of protein is more than you need each day, any day, unless you're running dozens of miles each day, wearing down your muscles, and even then it's questionable. Eat as well as you can. Feed your kids as well as you can. I personally recommend exclusive breastfeeding for 12 months, not 6 months or 4 months. Solid foods under 6 months of age increase the incidence of allergies. Solid foods under 6 months of age increase the incidence of obesity. solid foods beyond 6 months of age are a distant second best to breast milk. I recommend starting fruits and vegetables at 6 months of age if you'd like to, but it's not very important. Hard to argue with the diet that's composed of breast milk, sweet potatoes, applesauce, and steamed broccoli. Apparently it's not that hard to argue with it. But it still is not as good as drinking lots of breast milk and nothing but. During pregnancy, I strongly recommend that women abstain from dairy products. There's a great study in the obstetrical literature from about 15 years ago talking about dairy products in the third trimester of pregnancy appearing to increase the incidence of allergies in infants. A subsequent study, not as well done, talked about the second trimester of pregnancy. Might as well talk about the first trimester of pregnancy. Do not drink milk or eat cheese while you're pregnant, if possible. A study which garnered a tremendous amount of attention last year was a study that said, and it was a negative article, again, front page news about breast milk. Women who have peanut allergies, who eat peanuts while they're breastfeeding, have babies with a higher incidence of peanut allergies, which might make you want to ask, if you have a peanut allergy, why are you eating peanuts while you're breastfeeding? But it made front page news. A vegetarian diet has plenty of calories. It has plenty of protein, has plenty of vitamins, has plenty of calcium. Calcium is a tremendously overrated mineral. If you look at a graph of the incidence of osteoporosis in population groups compared to the amount of dairy that that same population group takes in, the incidence of osteoporosis rises step by step with dairy intake, which makes you want to say, huh. The reason this occurs is that there is virtually no calcium deficiency in America. American women have osteoporosis because of sodium chloride, salt excess, and protein excess. For those of us who remember chemistry class from high school, I don't, so I had to look it up. When you take in salt, which is sodium chloride, you retain the sodium ion, the positive ion. You're stuck with this negative ion, chloride, floating around. It has to be attached to a positive ion to be excreted. The most common positive ion, the most readily available positive ion, is calcium. You ingest sodium chloride, you excrete calcium chloride. It's been estimated that if American women would cut their salt intake by about a teaspoon a day, we could decrease hip fractures in the fifth and sixth and seventh decade of life by as much as 20 to 40%. When you take in a high protein diet, a standard American diet is best abbreviated SAD. When you take in the standard American diet, you have a lot of protein and a lot of phosphate and sulfate waste, some more negative ions. Those negative ions have to be excreted as a complete, well, they need calcium. You excrete calcium phosphate and calcium sulfate. What it amounts to is that if you eat a lot of protein, you probably need more calcium. If you drink a lot of milk, you probably need more milk, and around in a circle. Children do very nicely on a vegetarian diet. Pregnant women do very nicely on a vegetarian diet. We keep adjusting the amount of folic acid that you need. We keep adjusting the amount of other nutrients that you need. And the fact is that we don't know. The RDAs are treated as if they were etched in stone. You know that I believe the RDA for vitamin C is still about 30 milligrams, which does a nice job of preventing scurvy. There aren't a lot of people in the world, in the room, who are interested in preventing scurvy. There are certain issues that exist in other countries. There are certain issues that might exist in third world countries, so-called third world countries, where there may be protein deficiency, there may be caloric deficiency, there may be protein-calorie malnutrition in some countries that we know about. But in America and in most other countries, there's no protein-calorie malnutrition except in isolated pockets of poverty where we fail to deliver correct food to these people. Vegetarian diet works nicely during pregnancy. I have to take an awful lot of kids off of certain foods to attempt to treat and prevent allergy. What I found is that when you tell a child what they can't eat, On one notable occasion, I had a four-year-old, rather inarticulate four-year-old in my office, and I told him that I needed to try 1 week with no sugar and no dairy. I saw him fumbling for words. He finally got up off the little bench in my room, and he drilled me in the shin with his foot. His mother was mortified, and I thought, this is a pretty clear reminder of what happens when you attempt to restrict a child. If instead I had said to him, you know, for the next week I want you to eat more apples, more strawberries, more raspberries, your mom's going to get you some carrots that are all cut up and peeled and washed, and I'd like you to eat more beans so you can fart more, that little four-year-old probably would have been excited. Instead I said to him, let's not have any sugar or dairy for a week, and he kicked me in the shins. Hurt me too. I see a lot of moms who have kids with gastrointestinal distress as they're breastfeeding. And I also attempt to cut the protein and change the protein in their diets from a standard American protein mix of dairy, and more dairy on the side to no dairy, and occasionally restrict diets even further because they're having so much trouble. And I once communicated by instant message with my website partner, a very intelligent woman named Cheryl Taylor White, who corrected me. When I told her that the mother was having so much trouble, I took her off of dairy products and I took her off of wheat, and I went through the whole list, and she IM'd back very briefly, ever try it? And the only reason that she was so polite was that she didn't want to say ever try it, stupid. She said, take her off of dairy, see how she does. A vegetarian diet during pregnancy can be very simple, and as I said, I try very hard to tell people, whether they're children or fathers, who are the most recalcitrant of my patients, what they can eat rather than what they can't eat. Fruits, vegetables, lots of grains, lots of bean, some tofu, some pasta. I get a lot of questions about meal planning. You know, children don't like complicated meals. That's one of the reasons that they may not travel as well. They're not interested in Northern Italian pasta. They want biscotti. Okay? They may not be that interested in a fancy bean dish. And if you've got nothing better to do with your time than to make a sandwich with a smiling face on it made out of red peppers and olives, you read a good book. Simple meals, real simple meal planning, fruits, vegetables, grains, beans, pasta, tofu. That's what I talk about at the 9 to 12 month checkup. And what I announce to people is that I think that it's the best diet for all three or four of us in the room. I have great concern, as I mentioned, about fish. I don't know what's in the fish. The only thing you can say for eating chickens is that it's a very short-lived animal. You know, it hatches. We feed it a rather controlled type of food, very often a toxic type of food, but a free-range chicken might eat well. It lives a short life. We kill it, and then we eat it. Fish can live for years and years, swimming around in waters which have been figuratively and literally peed into by us and by industry. We don't know what is lodged in their flesh. When you see the signs up in the supermarket that say pregnant women should only eat swordfish once a month, it starts making you think about zero times a month, which would be a lot better than one time a month. We don't know how much protein your child should eat. We don't know how much calcium he or she should eat. We're not quite sure how much salt we should eat. We do know that less is more. Less is better. We keep changing the rules on oils. You know, canola oil, there's no canola plant. Canola stands for Canadian Oil Association. It was the rapeseed plant. They put bottles of rapeseed in the supermarket and people didn't buy rapeseed, so they changed it to canola, which sounds a lot like granola, and people bought it because it's a monounsaturated fat like olive oil. Olive oil has centuries of usage in the Mediterranean world, and olive oil has beneficial effects for the human body. Canola oil is question mark. There's not much doubt about the other oils that sound kind of sweet and groovy, like sunflower seed oil and corn oil. Cottonseed oil doesn't even sound that sweet and groovy, so we all know to stay away from that. During pregnancy, I recommend that women try to take in anywhere from 30 to 100 grams of protein each day. It should be high quality protein which doesn't necessarily mean fish, chicken, beef, and sheep. Instead, it can be a nice mixture of vegetarian protein. You do not need to complete the amino acid pattern within one meal. The warnings that were given, and they were very humorous warnings, were that if you didn't eat rice... I lose part of my audience here? Fell asleep right there? Oh, she's pooping. I'm sorry. I thought she was sleeping. Okay, just concentrate. I wasn't sure. Thank you. She turned her back and fell asleep. She said she turned her back and pooped. Thank you. That's... You don't need to eat rice and beans. You don't need to get the sulfur-containing amino acids right there balanced with every other amino acid within one meal. The new rule is you should do it within 24 hours, and that's not a great rule. There are population studies. I have very little interest in what happened to 100 men in Hawaii who ate tofu twice a week and appeared to have an increased incidence of senile dementia. I have much more interest in a group of billions of Asians over thousands of years who ate a diet nothing like the diet we eat here. They also do not eat a lot of tofu, but what they do is they eat a diet that is relatively lower in protein, a completely different type of protein. It's very, very safe. My confidence level as I discuss this type of diet has grown over 25 years and 24 years in practice. 24 years in practice. Because I've watched kids grow up. Watch my daughter grow up. My daughter, who will be 17, and who I do believe secretly rebels by going out and eating a piece of chicken with her friends. Little rebel. My daughter, who was caught in the second grade cafeteria line stealing a carton of milk, because even though we had purchased a meal ticket or a cafeteria ticket for her, we didn't buy any milk for her. So she would pilfer it. I finally told her that it was okay, we would buy her milk. She didn't have to steal it anymore. There would be no severe restrictions on dairy products, no matter what I believed. Every other child in the United States is supposed to drink 4 glasses of milk, and they won't drink any, and mine is supposed to drink none, and she would drink 8. You don't need to complete the protein within one meal. You can complete it over the course of a day or two. You do not need to worry about 100 men in Hawaii who eat tofu once in a while. What you do is you look at what happens when the Japanese came to San Francisco, or when the Chinese came to San Francisco, or when other groups of Asians and Mediterraneans migrated to the United States and left behind, with any luck, a twin brother, but usually it wasn't a twin brother, it was just some family members. The people over there lived a long time, didn't get cancer, didn't get heart disease, and the people here did. I will not throw numbers at you because they're tedious. But there's a dramatic increase when you study population groups migrating from traditional diets, lower in protein, lower in animal protein, and higher in complex carbohydrates, and higher in vegetable sources of protein. When those population groups migrate to the United States and they eat burgers and fries, they get sick and die. I don't measure cholesterol and lipid panels as often as I should in my office. I should probably get those numbers on every kid at age 3, 4, or 5. The biggest problem that I have is I don't know what to do with them. Because when I get an elevated cholesterol or a low HDL and a high LDL in a 5-year-old child, I don't have anybody to call. Because there are not a lot of specialists, even in a big town like Los Angeles, who deal with kids who have abnormal lipid panels. We know that these problems do not evolve when you're 40 years old or 50 years old. The studies were done during the Korean War, when we had the unfortunate opportunity to do a lot of autopsies on boys between the ages of 18 and 22, and we found streaks in their coronary arteries. The American diet begins causing heart disease in the first decade of life. The American diet is now creating type 2 diabetes in a significant number of 10-year-olds diagnosed with diabetes. Type 2 diabetes was your grandmother's diabetes. Unfortunately, she ate poorly or she ate too much, and at age 55 or 65 or 75, her pancreas stopped putting out quite as much insulin, and her cells were resistant to the insulin, and she got diabetes, and she either had to eat a lot better or take insulin shots. Somewhere between 30% and 50% of American 10-year-old kids who are diagnosed with diabetes are now being diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. Type 1 diabetes is a mistake. It's an autoimmune problem. Your body, by mistake, attacks your own pancreas. The pancreatic cells, which produce insulin, get bumped off, and you get diabetes. You can get it at age 15 or 20 months or age 5 or 6 years. Type 2 diabetes used to be a disease of old age and abuse, and now it's a disease of the standard American diet, the 72-ounce big gulp, the ingestion of sugar products in such quantities. You know that most of the kids beyond age 1 or 2 in America are drinking soft drinks in quantity. Most kids over the age of 1 or 2 are being subject to the influence of the manufacturers of cereals with a lot of sugar and McDonald's. I wasn't invited back to speak the next year at a hospital in New Jersey because I thought I coined the phrase. I don't know if I discovered it, but the phrase nutritional pedophilia. I said, what else would you call it if they put a multicolored playground out in front of the place? They have a third step. The first step is a multicolored playground. The third step is a little bitty plastic toy with a cultural icon like Shrek or Mickey or Minnie. And in between is food which we know to adversely affect your health in the short, medium, and long term. These are nutritional pedophiles. They're coming after our children. Many people cannot relate to the idea that there is nobody, again, in the American nutritional corporate world who's really interested in our kids' health. Instead, what they're interested in is increasing shareholder value. Gerber said it better than anybody 50 years ago. They said, babies are our business, our only business. They didn't say babies are our love or our passion. They said business. If we can convince you that your four-month-old who's breastfeeding too often or who weighs more than 14 pounds, that was the old Gerber's ad. If your four-month-old weighs more than 14 pounds or wants to eat more than every 4 hours, he's ready for cereal. There's nothing better than rice cereal at 4 months of age to give your poor little child rocks in his diaper. There's nothing better than the standard American diet to give your child rocks in his diaper. I have to deal with constipation in my office probably every hour or two, and it has to do with the standard American diet. The kids who are drinking milk and eating cheese and eating meat. If I could do one thing for the children in my practice, or I guess they might consider it being something that's being done to them, I would take cheese out of their refrigerators. I do a fair number of second opinion consultations in my office. Sometimes it's a third opinion consultation with an overweight 8-year-old. It's a pretty big 8-year-old. Kid's 20 pounds overweight. And he never has a good day at school. Because every day, if there are 20 kids in his class and 15 or 16 of them had a nice breakfast at home, one or two of them had a bad breakfast at home, and as they're walking into school, they bump into him and they say, look out, Chubbo, that's the end of his day. He's Chubbo. And I talk with the parents for a while, and I ask them questions. I might, again, be the second or third or fourth doctor they've seen. And I tell them, here's what I need you to do. I need you to go home. I mean, this kid's in trouble. And you can't talk about weight with an 8 or 10 year old. You have to talk about fitness and running fast and jumping high. Can't tell them to lose weight. I tell them to go home, throw away all their cheese. I ask them to please remove the red meat from their freezer and feed it to an animal they don't love. I ask them to take the jar of mayonnaise and hit it with a hammer. I ask them to please remove the peanut butter from the refrigerator. It's got two words. It's called peanut butter. That's not good. Peanut butter isn't good. And I go through that. I talk to the parents. I talk to the kid. And I talk about, again, raspberries and strawberries. And I say funny little things like, boy, during the summertime, isn't it fun to eat lots of dessert? You wouldn't want to eat ice cream. Let's eat watermelon. The kid might laugh. The kid might get sad. I amuse myself anyway. And at the end of this discussion, or somewhere around the middle of it, some of the parents get kind of annoyed because they say, well, what will he eat? At which point I go through my litany of fruits and vegetables and grains and so on. And I say, there's one other thing I need you to do, and that's to begin a family tradition. This kid's 20 pounds overweight. He's only this big. Yeah, it's one thing for me to be 20 pounds overweight. So I'd like you to begin a family tradition of leaving the house after dinner and taking a 20-minute walk for a couple weeks, and after that, after 2 weeks, I'd like you to do a 30-minute walk. And some people get angry enough, a couple people have walked out. And what I wanted to say on more than one occasion was, what's your idea? I mean, what would you rather do instead? And the reason I like my specialty, I couldn't take care of adults. I mean, I have to take care of adults, but I couldn't be an internist. I couldn't see a 40-year-old man, 50-year-old woman, who has abused their body for 3, 4, 5 decades and now comes in and wants to be fixed. I don't know how those guys do it, those internists. Bless their hearts. I mean, I got a chance to start with one of these and to say to you, I am looking for perfection for 6 months. I'm looking for you to eat a great diet and feed your child breast milk. I'm looking for you to avoid toxins in your food because they end up in your milk. I'm looking for you to eat a really great diet and feed your kid a perfect diet. And then at 6 months, if you'd like to be traditional, start some applesauce, organic applesauce. Make it yourself if you have time, otherwise buy it. And what else should you feed the child? Buy a carrot, steam a carrot, and hit it with the palm of your hand. There was a time when, and I believe it was Gerber's, it might have been somebody else, had a brochure. And the brochure was entitled, The 26 Steps to Safely Making Your Own Baby Food. Every third step, you had to boil your hands in water, 280 degrees. Otherwise, your kid might get into trouble. There was some thought that perhaps they were trying to discourage you from making your own baby food. I think it was either Gerber or the Beechnut. I don't remember which one of these lovely companies. It's real easy. Aim really high. Standard American diet moves right straight towards donuts at the end of the 7-year-old soccer game. Here are these poor little kids. These kids have run their little... They're celebrating fitness, and they won, they lost. The 7-year-old soccer game, they don't really usually know if they won or lost, and some of them aren't even quite sure if there was a ball on the field or not. But they had a good time. At the end of it, some silly grown-up brings a box of donuts. That's lazy. Cut up some watermelon, slice some oranges. Do not celebrate fitness and fun with a box of donuts. I recommend perfection for 6 to 7 months. I recommend aiming really high after that. You will fall short. I do not have a philosophical opposition to birthday cake, Christmas cookies, Hanukkah candy, Easter candy, or grandma's cookies. I wish that grandma would respect the way you're trying to feed your child and not offer your child fried chicken. But what you can explain to your child is that at a birthday party we eat this way, and we're not going to count how many cookies you ate at a birthday party, and we're not going to bring a bag of carrots to the birthday party. That's a lovely little nickname in kindergarten. Oh, look, it's the carrot boy from the birthday party. Hi, carrot boy from the birthday party. You know, it's a birthday party. Eat some cake. Eat a healthy cake if you can find it, although I don't remember throwing a responsible birthday party for my daughter, and maybe you won't either. But you know, it's a birthday party. But the rest of the week, you say to the child, you know, we ate that way at a birthday party, grandma's house, we eat those cookies, and for dessert tonight we got fresh raspberries or strawberries or watermelon left over from last night, which are incredibly sweet unless you ate Oreos an hour earlier. Oreos. You heard me say Oreos. They make me sad, too. When I was growing up, Oreos had lard in them. Remember that? They took the lard out, what, 6, 7, 10 years ago? They had lard and sugar. That's mean. It lets you know that they weren't really trying hard to feed me a nutritious dessert. They gave me lard and sugar, those Nabisco people. You don't count the number of cookies a kid eats at a birthday party, and you relax at grandma's house, and you don't make it a deal breaker. Okay? I personally have been a vegetarian for 30 years. I became a vegetarian in my last year of medical school, and it was easy. I looked at the histories. I worked at the Veterans Hospital. I worked at Milwaukee Children's. I worked at the county hospital there. And I'd look at the diet history, because I took care of adults too during medical school. And I'd see these people, and it was a straight road. You know, it was like somebody said, drive the next 82 miles and you get to Chicago, and they were shocked 82 miles later when they got to Chicago. I mean, you eat this way, you're going to end up with these problems. Anybody who goes into the backyard and barbecues meat two or three nights each summer should not be surprised if you get an intestinal malignancy a decade or two or three later. It's in the books. You can look it up. Charcoal broiled meat increases, is a co-carcinogen. It increases the incidence of malignancy. I would guess that charcoal broiled eggplant might do the same thing. I just feel better eating it. There's a controversy about soy. There's a controversy about wheat. There's a controversy about everything nutritional. Now, it is possible that the entire soy controversy was generated by the dairy or the meat industry because they had some fear. But you know what? I don't think they're very scared of us vegetarians. I think that what happened was people decided to look a little harder and nitpick. If your child is eating a vegetarian diet with a fair amount of soy, you do not need to fear the phytoestrogens in soy. It's not going to turn your boy into a girl or your girl into a boy or grow breasts on your dog. The soy that your child eats, the diet that most vegetarian kids eat, puts them in the upper 1% of eating habits in the United States, which, by the way, is damning with faint praise, but you know it's the best you can do sometimes. You don't need to worry about a child who eats a fair amount of tofu. If soy is bad for us, I'm in real trouble, because I start my day very often with soy cheese and a soy beverage. And by the way, soy cheese is not a health food. Soy cheese is a highly processed, quite salty soy food. But I fool myself. Eating raw might be one of the best things to do. Avoiding wheat might be an incredibly important thing to do. If you think about it, there's some greenery that grows in your front lawn and you mow it once a week, and then there's some greenery that grows out on the farm, and we found that it's real easy to cut it and chop it up and turn it into bread. There isn't any science to support the idea that that protein, gluten protein, is good for you. There are about 30% of Americans, perhaps 40 to 50 depending on who you believe, and these are pretty mainstream scientists, about 30% of Americans at least, who would be healthier if they did not eat gluten, wheat protein. Protein also found in other grains, but I recommend a vegetarian pregnancy. I recommend vegetarian lactation. I happen to think it's an optimal way to feed kids. There are American questions that are upside down. My daughter doesn't eat any cheese. Is that okay? No, it's not okay. It's 180 degrees away from okay. My son won't drink any milk. Do you realize that we're the only mammals that wean from breast milk to anything other than water? It's a clever little game. You say to somebody, what's the fabric that you can make from a fiber that's spun by a worm? And say it three times. Silk, silk, silk. And what do cows drink? And people will say, milk, milk, milk. No, they don't. Cows drink water. Baby cows drink milk and then they stop. It's not a food that we're supposed to drink after a certain period of time in maturation. We're probably supposed to breastfeed exclusively for anywhere from 12 to 36 months, depending on which one of Kathy Detweiler's studies you'd like to read. If you ever have a chance to listen to Kathy Detweiler speak, take that opportunity. Read whatever she's written in your spare time. Kathy Detweiler does a lot of anthropological study of breastfeeding, and she studies exclusive breastfeeding as related to different parameters, like the time to tripling of your weight or the time to sexual maturation. How long do elephants drink only their mother's milk? How long do other mammals, other primates, drink exclusively their mother's milk? We're probably meant to exclusively breastfeed for closer to 2 years, not 4 months or 6 months. All of these decisions are influenced by economics, not by good health and good nutrition. I recommend vegetarian pregnancy, vegetarian child rearing. It's one of the healthiest things you can do for your child. There are mono diets which aren't good for you. Imagine drinking soy milk from day one of life. Bo Lonerdahl Lonnerdal. No H. Bo Lonnerdal works at UC Davis. Bo Lonnerdal is one of the good guys and one of the bad guys. He's one of the good guys because he studies breast milk like crazy and he promotes it. And one of the reasons that he does this and knows it so well is that he also does troubleshooting for the formula industry. When they make a mistake and kids in Taiwan begin having seizures, he goes and looks at what changed in the formula over the past 6 or 12 or 20 months. And one of the things that he and a few other people discovered was that soy formula has deposits so much manganese, a particularly unpleasant metal in excess, so much manganese in certain sections of the brain that we are probably directly causing ADD. That there's probably a one-to-one correlation between drinking soy milk from birth, Isomil or whatever the other names are, and developing brain disorders later in life. This is something that you can pick out of 5,000 articles if you Google it. 5,000, maybe more. And yet, you won't ever read anything about it because there's nobody interested in doing battle with the people who manufacture that food. Vegetarian pregnancy, vegetarian child-rearing isn't that hard. I don't have a lot of hope for keeping any of these children in the room, or many of you in the room, away from pizza for the rest of your lives. But you can try. You can let kids know that there are foods that we eat every day, and then there are some once-in-a-while foods. And the kids relate very nicely to that. I mean, on July the 6th or 7th, when I do a checkup, and I discuss food restriction in a kind, cuddly way with a 6 or 10-year-old child, and I say, you know, for dessert, I will be having watermelon instead of ice cream, because it's summer and because that's a real dessert, and ice cream's for birthday parties, and maybe instead, tonight, for dessert, I'll have Christmas cookies. And they all laugh, and they say, it's not Christmas. They understand it. When I explain to kids that you can read the newspaper, you could read the newspaper today, when they use the word E. coli in the same paragraph with the recall of beef in this morning's paper, yesterday's paper. E. coli is a polite way of saying animal poop. Is there any word that 4 or 5 or 6-year-old kids enjoy more than animal poop? Okay? I tell them, I promise you, honest to gosh, if you go to McDonald's, a fair number of hamburgers might also have animal poop in them. They laugh. And then their moms, who, by the way, took them to McDonald's perhaps last week, or the dad did, I don't know. The moms say, it's right, there's animal poop in the burgers once in a while. Honestly. Kids understand it. You ask kids questions about hot dogs, and you describe hot dogs to them. They listen to it. And the people who don't listen are the parents. It's the hardest part of my job. A lot of parents, and this is a particular affliction of very busy fathers more than mothers, pardon the slur on my own group, but a lot of fathers need to celebrate with their kids in terms of time and energy cheap. It takes 20 minutes to go from McDonald's to Baskin Robbins, and you're the greatest dad in the world, and Mom never lets me do this. Now the kid's going to catch you, okay? He's going to catch you in 10 years, okay? Or she's going to catch you 10, 20 years and say, so you taught me to like salty, greasy food and then some sugar afterwards. Thank you. Thanks, Dad. It takes 2 hours to go to the park and play, and then you go to the pet store. Kids love the pet store. You go to the park and the pet store, and then you go to the market and you pick out the best apples. It takes a couple hours. And the kid doesn't always say thank you for the apples because his friends are over at McDonald's, but boy, it's a job. It's a job. The people out there are chasing down our kids with really bad food, greasy, high-protein, bad-protein food. I recommend teaching kids the reason vegetarianism can work. You teach them to love animals, okay? They do not have to become animal rights activists. Wouldn't be bad if they did. But you teach them where the... You unsanitize the burger. You unsanitize the steak. You let them know where it came from. You do not need to be overly graphic and induce nightmares in a child to let them know that this is not an abstraction, that cow that you cuddled at the state fair or that sheep that you had at your petting zoo when you were 3 years old at your friend's birthday party, that sheep's going to get turned into food, and the way that it happens is that they have to do it in and then it ends up on your plate. It's not an abstraction. The ecological issues involved in vegetarianism are fascinating and beyond the scope of a late to mid-evening discussion because it could get tedious, but the ecological issues are huge. I mean, you know that it takes an awful lot of water and an awful lot of grain, enough to feed countless dozens of people, to feed one person in San Francisco a steak. Okay? That's not the morality involved is a pretty simple thing to deal with. You can ignore it once in a while, but you can't ignore it on a daily basis. And I'm wearing leather shoes. I have plastic shoes at home, but they tend to look like plastic shoes. I'm working on it, though, because more than occasionally I get challenged. Whenever I attempt to promote a strict vegan diet, which is an even healthier diet, where you avoid dairy products and you avoid eggs and you avoid yogurt, that's a healthier diet. But I'm wearing leather shoes right now. So even though I might mention the health aspects of it, it's hard for me to discuss the morality until I get better plastic shoes and a better plastic belt. Kids can be taught to celebrate with vegetarian food. It's not that hard. To go through each nutrient step by step. The amount of protein, as I mentioned, is hotly debated. There's a 100% difference of opinion in mainstream medical literature about how much protein a child needs, gram per kilogram or gram per pound. It's pretty clear that nobody really knows. How much protein? Your child will find that protein. Your child will eat as much protein as he or she needs. There's a study that was done about 20 years ago where they hired about 100 graduate students. Actually, you don't have to hire graduate students. They're free. They got about 100 graduate students involved at a very large university-based daycare center. And they had this daycare center just festooned, just packed with food. Food stations all over the place. They were there for 4 hours. Graduate students followed the kids around, kept a notebook on each and every kid. And they did this for about 90 days, and they found that, I don't know if it was 100% or almost 100% of the children balanced their diets over 60 to 90 days. As we all know, in 1 week, your child might decide to only eat beans or never eat beans. But over a period of 90 days, if you were to keep a diet history in your spare time when you're not making those little sandwiches with happy faces made out of red peppers, if you were to keep a diet history over 90 days, you would find that your child ate the right amount of protein, carbohydrate, fat, vitamin A, vitamins B, C, D, and so on. Yes?
How many kids were in that study?
100. It was huge. I mean, that's not huge by some medical, by pharmaceutical standards, but it was a huge study, and they found that the diets were balanced. Kids do that. We are very good animals for a period of time in our lives. We get as much exercise as we need. We get as much sleep as we need. We don't do it in the ways as that our parents want us to get it, but we get as much sleep as we need. That's a topic for tomorrow morning. Somebody said to me, oh, you wrote a sleep book. I said, no, I wrote a not sleep book. Okay? There's a sleep book out there. I got the not sleep book. If you're interested in sleep, it's probably the wrong book. If you're interested in rationalizations, justification for not sleeping, I got the right book. I wrote a nutrition book, 1994, Good Food Today, Great Kids Tomorrow. It is a very firmly positioned book. My publisher said, you take a point of view, and it was, again, it's vegan family nutrition. He said, you take a point of view and you take your opinion and put it right out there, and you'd be just like Oliver Stone, and you don't waver from your opinion. And as a result, I think we sold about 3,200 books. Hundreds and hundreds of books is what we sold. And the reason was, in 1994, maybe now it would work, people were not ready to hear that you should have no dairy and you should have no meat and no chicken and it'd be a lot better and you don't need to worry about calcium and so on. Weren't ready. We get plenty of protein. We don't know how much protein you need, but we do know that children in countries all over the world get enough protein on diets completely different than American diets. Meat is not a high protein food. It is a high fat food. Chicken is not that much lower in fat, and fish is a crapshoot. Beans are good for you, and so are grains. And if you want to, you can get a little more clever, and you can play with different types of tofu dishes, and you can make different types of bean dishes. People ask me how to prepare beans. Firstly, I tell them I don't know, because I'm not allowed to cook, ever since my wife caught me cooking 20 years ago and realized that I was using Thousand Island dressing as a sauté. I'm not allowed to cook anymore at our house. But you soak beans overnight and then you put them in a pan with some onions and some garlic. And you chop up some carrots. And you got a bean dish. You don't need to get it terribly exotic. And if you want to, you can just soak beans overnight and make some rice. Brown rice preferably, maybe quinoa, who knows. There are fancy grains out there that are real easy to get. We get enough protein. Carbohydrate is an interesting issue. We get far too much of these simple carbohydrates and not enough of the complex carbohydrates. Somebody turn the heat up in here, I can still breathe a little. Off. Oh yeah, it's hot in here, or else I got a lot of hot air. Talk louder. Too many simple sugars. Kids get simple sugars all the time. The cereals. You ever walk through a supermarket with a 3-year-old kid on your left hand, and you're up here looking at the different types of oatmeal, trying to decide which kind of oatmeal you want, organic oatmeal and so on. The kid's down there crying his little eyes out because all he's looking at, Tony the Tiger and the Leprechaun, which they put right down there. It is not a cliche. It is true supermarket marketing. Supermarket marketing. They put those cereals at eye level for the little kid so that he can cry and finally give in, and you buy him an incredibly overpriced $4 box of sugar with some grains in it. You know, honey bunches of oats don't have a lot of honey in them. Okay? Sling in the grocery store might bring the kid slightly below the oatmeal level. We get too many simple carbohydrates, we do not get enough complex carbohydrates. What happens when you eat simple carbohydrates is that your blood sugar rises rapidly, your insulin level rises even more rapidly, and you end up with problems with insulin and sugar metabolism as the years go on. Not the decades anymore, as the years go on. When you eat complex carbohydrates, and that might be an apple or any other piece of fruit, is about 90% water. So you are getting a fair amount of sugar in there, but the sugar is tied up in a matrix of fiber and water. And it gets absorbed slowly, and you get a nice blood sugar curve, and it falls, and you can eat some lunch. There is a period of time in our lives where we are too busy and playing too hard. That's a 5-year-old kid. He's too busy, he's playing too hard, and you have to call him to have lunch 5 times, and he won't come in. It's time for lunch. You get in here right now. It's time for lunch. Kid's too busy. I personally start thinking about lunch around 9 o'clock in the morning. I am never too busy to be called in for lunch. Kids are like that. You can leave them alone, let them find food. The best way to get your child to eat more broccoli is to pretend that you don't care if your kid eats broccoli. The more energy we invest in getting a child to eat fruits and vegetables, the more likely they are at age 1.5, 2.5, 3.5, or 10 to push the broccoli button. Broccoli? Maybe I will, maybe I won't. The traditional American way of dealing with this is to say, listen, I want you just to take 2 bites of this stuff that you really hate, and I'm going to reward you with some food that's going to be bad for you for the rest of your life. And the kid says to himself, so broccoli is clearly a little bit worse than I thought it was because I get ice cream afterwards. Ice cream must be much better than I thought because I get it after eating those abhorrent green things. And the rest of our lives, we reward ourselves with ice cream, and every bite of spinach or broccoli feels like penance. And what you say to the kid is, eat your broccoli or don't eat your broccoli. And by the way, you got 30 seconds and I'm going to eat it. By the way, we have no ice cream. But we got raspberries and strawberries. You want to live on raspberries and strawberries for the next 5 days, let me know. Get back to me, I'll make some beans. Okay, you don't like the broccoli, I'll eat the broccoli. I can make something else. The more we care about how much they eat vegetables, the fewer vegetables they are liable to eat. Now, the flaw in my incredibly overly facile point of view here is that when kids don't eat, their blood sugar drops. So now you got this cranky kid who already missed lunch, and you say to him, the reason you're cranky is because you didn't eat lunch, and he says to you, no! So somewhere in between, eat 2 bites of this and we'll get you a whole bunch of dessert. Or my favorite is, you need to finish the last one of these. I'm not going to put this in the refrigerator. You want your dessert? Just finish the last one. So you want me to eat one extra whatever it is in order to get to the food that I shouldn't be eating in the first place because it'll make me sick on the short term. It's my favorite Thanksgiving phone call. Whenever I'm on call Thanksgiving or the day after Thanksgiving, I get calls from all over the nation about kids who are throwing up. And the reason is they were on the edge and this virus is around, and then they eat heaven knows what, and then a little more of that for dessert, and they throw up. I tell the kids, it's, again, the kids get it. They're getting on an airplane. I say, you know what's really fun on an airplane? What's really fun on an airplane is having a lot of candy and then a Coke and throwing up on the airplane. Honest to gosh, that's really fun. The kid gets it. Okay, the kid's thinking, geez, I don't... You're kidding, aren't you? Yeah, I'm kidding. Okay, you got it. But the parents give the kid what we used to call in my family airplane food. Well, we keep giving this to keep him happy on the airplane. Okay. He's not that happy when he throws up. We get enough protein. We don't get enough complex carbohydrates. We get a lot of simple carbohydrates. We probably eat too many carbohydrates in America, and we probably should try to balance it. The Atkins diet is foul. The zone diet is very useful for short-term weight loss and not terribly scientifically sound. Somewhere in between there is a sensible diet. Eat great. Eat great and then relax. We get a lot of fat in our diets. We do know that olive oil has beneficial effects. We do know that saturated fat hurts you. We know that trans fat is a bad set of fats. When you eat a lot of fat, you not only get obese, you also end up with weight problems. There's an increase in malignancy in people on high-fat diets, and those malignancies span from your thyroid all the way down to your toes, certainly including your intestinal tract. Breast cancer may be adversely affected by a high-fat diet. Vitamin A is a lifesaver, but there's a lot of vitamin A and beta-carotene in the average American diet and in most other diets. There are countries where adding vitamin A supplementation will help and will prevent everything from eye problems to measles complications. America is not one of those countries. We get plenty of vitamin A. The B vitamins are questionable. One of the jokes that you may have heard is that in America, because of the way we take vitamins, we have some of the most expensive urine in the world. Dark green, expensive urine. You do excrete a fair amount of B vitamins when you take vitamin pills, but we don't know how much you need, and we don't know how much you need when you exercise a lot, and we don't know how much you need when you're pregnant, even though we have numbers. We have found that when you double your intake of folic acid during pregnancy, prior to pregnancy and during pregnancy, prior to pregnancy is the most important thing. We have fewer neural tube defects. We have fewer birth defects when women take certain vitamins. We also know that there are vitamins, there are B vitamins, which can decrease the incidence of heart disease and other cardiovascular disease in women if taken in slightly higher quantities than usual. Vitamin C is underrated and overrated all at once. Taking 10,000 milligrams of vitamin C probably doesn't prevent every single cold, might even give you kidney stones for all I know. Taking 30 milligrams of vitamin C may prevent scurvy, but it probably doesn't promote good health. There is virtually no vitamin D deficiency in America. The American Academy of Pediatrics, influenced by money from the manufacturers of vitamin supplements, proclaimed very recently that all breastfeeding babies should be taking vitamin D supplementation. It would have been politically very incorrect if they had said all African-American babies who live in Chicago and wear clothes from head to toe about 11 months of the year should take vitamin D. So instead they said everybody should take vitamin D. The damage done is very clear. What is obvious to a mother who is going to be having a baby is that you have your choice of either giving this complete formula with vitamin D, the right amount of protein and fluoride in it, for heaven's sakes, or taking a chance on this breast milk, which is obviously deficient in vitamin D, iron, and I don't know what else. It was a very damaging statement to imply that all, not to imply, but to state that all breastfeeding babies should take supplemental vitamin D. There is in America a sunlight deficiency. The pendulum swung all the way around from getting a golden tan to avoiding sun 100% of the time. Again, somewhere in between those two extremes is the right answer. Some sunlight is good for you. Taking your baby out into the sun for 10 or 20 minutes a day is good for your baby. Not at high noon on July 10th. Okay? But some sunlight is good for you. It converts pre provitamin D into vitamin D. Vitamin D, by the way, is not a vitamin. It's a hormone. It's a very important hormone. Our bodies are meant to produce exactly the right amount. You don't need to take supplemental vitamin D unless you live in Chicago, have very darkly pigmented skin, and wear clothing from head to toe 11 months out of the year, in which case you got other problems. Vitamin E isn't as good for you as we said it was. Vitamin E is an antioxidant. It probably does help to decrease the incidence of heart disease and malignancy in some people. Potentially more valuable than vitamin E as an antioxidant would be jaundice. The bilirubin level that normal babies get, normal babies being breastfeeding babies, the bilirubin level that these babies get is higher than formula-fed babies get. And the reason is that bilirubin, jaundice chemical, lovely yellow dye, is an antioxidant and a bactericidal compound. It decreases the incidence of infections during the first week of life, prevents tissue damage. There are certain people who have diseases. Gilbert syndrome, which is an extremely the most common of the metabolic diseases, keeps your bilirubin level doubled pretty much your whole life. Bilirubin level that we run around with is about 1 milligram per deciliter. People with Gilbert syndrome have 2 milligrams their whole lives. Babies with severe jaundice get 20 to 25 milligrams and they look yellow. When you have 2 milligrams of bilirubin, it doesn't show up. How do you produce that double level of bilirubin if you don't have Gilbert syndrome, which isn't a great disease to have? You fast one day a week, or you stay hypocaloric, and you have slightly elevated bilirubin level. And the incidence is very clear, because people with Gilbert syndrome have much less heart disease and much less cancer because they have a chronic level, higher level of antioxidant. I'm not suggesting that everybody in the room will go out and fast one day a week. It's kind of tough, especially if you have to go to work and you end up spacey by 2 in the afternoon. But what I am suggesting is that being hypocaloric your whole life is good for you. The one medical intervention which is associated with not just longevity but better health through your whole life, the one medical intervention is staying 20% under the so-called ideal weight for your height or age, which means eating a lot fewer calories for your height or age every day if possible. That's not easy to do in America, the land again of the 72-ounce big gulp and the all-you-can-eat Mother's Day buffet. There's a very clever cartoon some years ago where the kids all woke the mom up on Sunday morning on Mother's Day, and they show the little panels, and the last panel is a mother waiting in line with 100 other people at the all-you-can-eat buffet with all the pastries and just being thrilled to be there to eat as much as she possibly could at 10 a.m. on Mother's Day. The all-you-can-eat buffet is not a great idea. We get enough protein. We should change the way we eat carbohydrates. We should look hard at the fats we eat. The only fat that's really any good for us is probably olive oil. Flaxseed oil is good for you, but you can't cook much with flaxseed oil because it tastes good and it burns. The only bad seasoning is salt. The rest of the seasonings are good for us. You can start at 8 or 9 or 10 or 12 months of age giving your child garlic and then a little more garlic. They smell funny, but they're healthier. They like their food better with some garlic in it. Not a lot of salt. The only good oil, again, is olive oil in moderation. I tell the little kids, 5-6-year-olds, that you ruin a perfectly good salad when you pour orange grease all over it. I tell them not to go to restaurants that serve cheap bread, because if you get really good bread, you don't need butter on it. Vegetarian diet, as I was saying, is, in my opinion, is the healthiest diet. The dietitians finally signed on a few years ago, admitting that there was adequacy and perhaps a benefit to a vegetarian diet. The American Academy of Pediatrics lags behind because of the incredible influence of the food industry's dollars in medical associations. I'm going to end right now, perhaps later than I should have, and be very, very happy to take any questions you might have. As long as you accept I don't know is a good answer. Yes?
I'm studying childbirth education and labor assisting and probably going to go towards midwifery. And what we've been taught in terms of the pregnant diet, I think early on, the guy who said 100 grams of protein is really powerful.
Dr. Brewer, Tom Brewer, great guy.
Yeah. What I've learned is the medical community doesn't accept that, but the midwifery community does, and that seems to be the standard that's pushed on the midwifery clients and salt to taste. And I just want you to respond to that and tell me how you say contrary.
I did a TV show with the Bradley people some years ago, and it was a panel, and it was the great Dr. Bradley, Dr. Brewer, the Hathaways, who are some of the loveliest people you'd ever want to meet, Marge and Jay Hathaway, a couple other people, and me. Average weight was right around 300 pounds of our panel. I think at the time I didn't weigh 300 pounds, so I brought the average down. The women should eat as well as they can during pregnancy. I mean, I've never thrown up for any more than a few days in a row, and I don't know what it's like to throw up a 30 to 60 to 80 days in a row. And protein, a high protein diet will help you to throw up. So you eat as well as you can. You eat high quality protein. Many women and their husbands use pregnancy as an excuse for more ice cream. You know, chocolate chip cookies. It's not pickles and ice cream, it's just plain ice cream. You know, go ahead, indulge yourself once in a while, for heaven's sakes. You're walking around with your center of gravity shifting towards the ocean. You're entitled to eat a little funny once in a while, but eat great most of the time. And eat protein that's pretty high quality. And don't worry about eating more calcium and drinking milk. Milk is a very bad way to get calcium. Yes.
Blood pressure,
yes. Salting to taste during pregnancy is probably okay. Now, if there's anybody in the room who was raised, as I was, with your own private salt shaker at the dinner table, okay, salting to taste isn't good. So I don't know where you draw that line. I mean, most people in the room, not most, I'm making assumptions, a lot of people in the room were raised on a diet that was pretty high in salt, and unlearning that affection for salty foods is very difficult, okay? It doesn't just cause high blood pressure in susceptible people. It probably elevates blood pressure in everybody. It's not good for you. But salt to taste during pregnancy. It's just 9 months. Go ahead. But you also know what happens when you salt to excess during pregnancy. Yes, please. All of it. Nothing is considered. I just read a headline: a vegetarian family was arrested for abusing their child. You know, I mean, you're going to see. Wait till you see what happens when the breastfeeding campaign begins in the fall, and the government is devoting some financial resources to promoting breastfeeding. They are going to find breastfeeding families somewhere who hurt, whose babies didn't grow right and ended up sick. Vitamin B12 deficiency can occur in a strict vegan diet. And if you are concerned about it and you don't want to eat tempeh and you don't eat any yogurt at all, which is probably a good idea, if you are very concerned about it, take a vitamin pill with vitamin B12. If vitamin B12 deficiency is evolving and there are symptoms, or you ever want to check it with a blood test, may have to do with the amount of acid in your stomach. Older adults can get vitamin B12 deficiency, and other vitamin deficiencies because of decreased hydrochloric acid in their stomachs. But vitamin B12 deficiency is really rare. Really rare. It's fascinating. It's like the doctors who say, you know, you really shouldn't take echinacea or elderberry or feverfew for your migraine headaches because it's just throwing money down the drain. Okay, well, there are more people hurt by amoxicillin, and there's more money spent on Zithromax, and there's a lot more money spent on doctor's appointments than is spent on feverfew for your migraine headaches. There are the analogy you want. It's a circle. It's a big circle. I'll come back. Here we go. There are a lot more people hurt by the standard American diet than are hurt by a strict vegan diet, or for that matter, by being raw food fanatics. Fanatics is the wrong word, but let's use it anyway. There are so many countless millions, tens of millions of children hurt by the standard American diet, that putting vitamin B12 into a headline is misleading. Yes, please.
I have a question about earlier.
I certainly...
He has a real hard time keeping weight.
Yes. I watched your child. Your child's got a lot of energy. Okay? Small's good.
You know, I tend to totally agree.
Small is good. I understand. Pediatricians are an ignorant group when it comes to nutrition. Doctors in general are ignorant when it comes to nutrition. All we know is that bigger is better. Or we chart your kid. Some of the funniest, and not so funny to the families, I'm sure, some of the funniest consultations I do involve a short stature consultation. Again, I'm the third doctor, fourth doctor. I walk into the room, I've never seen this family before, and running around in my exam room is this really great-looking, little bitty four-year-old boy. It's always a four-year-old boy. Nobody cares about short four-year-old girls in America. You're allowed to be short if you're a girl. And it's a cultural bias. It's a problem. But it's a short four-year-old. He's pretty short. And the mom's sitting there, and she's really nice, you know, nice, healthy-looking woman. And I ask a few questions, and I ask a few more questions, and I finally say to her, how tall are you? She said, 5'1¼". How tall is your husband? He's 5'7". He's 5'6". Okay, he lies. He's 5'6", and you're 5'1", and your son is short. That'll be $300. I do a little more. I do more than that. I ask more questions, but I have a really healthy practice. I also have some kids who aren't so healthy, but I got a really healthy practice, and I have a lot of lean people in my practice. And the kids are lean. And I finally say to them, "Do you have a picture of yourself when you were 11?" And they usually wince, because at age 11, boy, they were twigs, okay? They were skinny and didn't like it. And it's genetics. Now, I don't know what your family looks like, or what you look like when you're not pregnant, breastfeeding, or postpartum, or whatever, but if you're lean and your husband's lean, or short and short, and so on and so forth, your child's going to be the same weight. And the charts are not good charts. The charts, the 50th percentile isn't a good percentile. You know, you don't want to be at the 50th percentile for a 5-year-old or for a 55-year-old in America. Those are fat people. Now, it's not so much the size, it's the decreased health that occurs as you gain too much weight. I like to leave kids alone. Now, I also will not ignore the fact that growth hormone deficiency might run through the family. Don't miss it. Okay? Don't be terribly facile about it. I mean, I just abbreviated this 4-year-old, short 4-year-old checkup. But growth hormone deficiency is really rare. And instead what happens is familial short stature or familial leanness. We should leave them alone and ignore your pediatrician. I mean, you know, I ask questions. I mean, I get calls. I particularly get calls in second, third year life. People say, you know, I'm a little worried because my daughter hasn't eaten anything for the past 3 days except 3 teaspoons of applesauce and a rice cracker. And I say, well, really, what's she doing now? And they say, well, she's in the living room. She's running in circles around her father. I'm less worried than I was at the beginning of the conversation. We're really good animals for a period of time in our lives. We eat as many calories as we need. We run. You know, the kids stop running when we tell them to? Don't run. What are you telling me not? Take me where I can run, okay? Kid's a natural athlete. Don't tell him not to run. Take him where he can run. Don't push him to eat more. Just let him eat as much as he wants. Eating more is the sine qua non of good nutritional health. Eat more. I mean, I remember when my daughter would have a breakfast, she'd have 4 pancakes. I'd puff out my chest as if I invented both my daughter and pancakes all at the same time. You know, on the days when I eat a lot, I eat everything in sight, I don't say, wow, what a good eater I am. I say, oink. I mean, people, I pick up a chart and people say, my child's not a good, it says on there, not a good eater. What do you mean, not a good eater? Well, yeah, he doesn't eat. That's a good eater. You eat as much as you need, then you stop and you move on. That's a good eater. and you trust the kid. You offer real good foods. And you trust them. They find it. Yes, please. That is correct.
Well, there's some experts now that are saying that there's a study that was done recently that no matter how much flaxseed oil a woman consumes, it didn't increase the standard of death process. So we can take the supplement dangerously. We all have women. In fact, some are trying all vegans.
This might be the same people who sell that supplement, or the MarTech people. There's some lovely people, the MarTech people. You know what? We don't know. We don't know. An extreme diet is probably trickier. Vegan diet could be regarded as extreme. Vegetarian diet's easier. Lacto-ovo-vegetarian might be easier still. I think that, and this is a discussion I have with teenagers. I mean, when I was in my internship, I was a vegetarian, but I was a chocolate chip cookie cheese sandwich vegetarian. I don't think I was that much healthier than the intern in the line next to me, okay? The omega-3, omega-6 fatty acids are an interesting issue. The fatty acids are measured according to the length of the chain of the carbon atoms and where the double bonds are and so on. The omega-6, omega-3 fatty acid ratio in America arguably is supposed to be 1-to-1. Omega-3s are found in things like the yolks of the eggs of free-range chickens and the omega-6 fatty acids are found everywhere. Our ratio, instead of being 1-to-1, is about 20-to-1 omega-6s. We're real short on omega-3s, which is why I have acquiesced to the idea that maybe eating the eggs from a free-range chicken is good for you. I've acquiesced to the idea that maybe taking supplements, oil supplements, would be good for you. I personally have never been able to tolerate Udo's oil, which is the best oil. Udo Erasmus is a man who's written a great book about fats, and he invented the perfect oil. It tastes horrendous. Still, I got it sitting in my refrigerator. My wife keeps saying, "Can I throw that out?" I said, "No, I'm going to start soon. I'm going to take a tablespoon every day." You know what the answer is again? We don't know. Eat great. Eat almonds. Eat walnuts. Put flaxseed oil into things once in a while, maybe every day. Develop a tolerance for Udo's oil, olive oil, and then stay away from the omega-6s, all those other fats, all the saturated and trans fats, which could just absolutely chase your kid down, find him, and make him greasy. I gave a talk once to a group of fourth graders, fourth grade class school, and I had a stick of butter, and I let the butter sit while I talked, and we were in a hot room, and the butter melted, and I said, "Now, you know, when we talk—I don't remember if we were talking about a fettuccine Alfredo or McDonald's burger and fries—but I said, I mean, would anybody take that stick of butter and pick it up and rub it in your hair?" And I was getting it, you know. Of course, all the boys' hands shot up. Forgot I was talking to fourth grade boys. And I said, "Well, you wouldn't. Okay, all right. Would a normal person do that?" I said, "No. Would you want to rub that whole stick of butter on the inside of your body, all of your muscles?" Kids get it. Kids don't want to be greasy. But, you know, they can't protect themselves. I personally cannot protect myself from a plate of chocolate chip cookies at a birthday party. If I'm sitting next to that bowl of Hershey's Kisses at the Christmas party, yeah, I come home and there's little silver foils in my pocket and I don't know how they got there, okay? So if I can't do it, and I'm not proud of that, by the way, if I can't do it, I can't expect the little kid to protect himself from the big bag of potato chips that you bought him. Just eat a few of them, you'd say. And by the way, I do not worry about big kids at these ages. This is a prop right here. This is a hired actor. I do not worry about big kids at these ages, because if we feed them right, they end up lean. I have seen plenty of 25-pound four-month-olds, that is a big four-month-old, who have turned into 26-pound one-year-olds or 28-pound two-year-olds. They don't pick a curve. They go vertical, horizontal. My nephew lost weight from his 9-month to his 12-month checkup. His grandmother, my mother, my sister, his mother were real worried. And you know, he turned out fine. Yeah, sort of. Yeah. And I mean, this is This is people get worried about this also. The real big kids or the real little kids, you know, give them, offer them good food, relax. I mean, I wrote one of my favorite essays had to do with slow weight gain in first year life, and I entitled it "Look at the Baby, Not the Scale." You look at the vitality. I mean, there couldn't be anything wrong with a person who looks like that, okay? And by the same token, the lean kids. I mean, that's, you know, you flip on the television set during the NBA season, you see a bunch of $4 million a year guys running around with ribs. I mean, they got big delts also, but they got ribs. It's one of my goals before I die is see my ribs again. I'm going to have a little harder time than they will. Yes, please. Genetically modified vegetables. I think it's one of the dumbest ideas we've ever had. We are seeing leakage of these genes now. They are leaking out. We are finding, this is a very isolated finding, we're finding the genes getting stuck, working their way into human cells. You know, they're not doing anything, nothing bad is happening yet. It's an abhorrent idea. Genetically modifying soy, that's why you gotta shop so carefully. You know, organically derived foods are much better for you. John Stossel should go to jail for lying to people on television for his little segment where he said, well, there's just as many pesticide residues in these foods as in the organic foods. And then they had to apologize 2 weeks later, but they should have fired him. I know the guy. He's not a nice guy. Genetically modified food should be avoided. I don't know if we should microwave foods. You know, when you heat a food to 400 degrees... something is occurring that does not occur in nature. Now, we've been cooking foods for some generations, like, I don't know, thousands of generations. But when you heat, whether it's an eggplant or a piece of chicken to 400 degrees, you are creating chemicals, some of which are called cyclic amines, which your body doesn't know how to digest. And they act like microscopic sandpaper on the cells of your innards. And they create problems. I mean, diverticulosis and diverticulitis are not diseases of vegetarians. I mean, there are vegetarians who die of stomach cancer, but it doesn't happen that often. You know, there are people who get stuck with hypercholesterolemias, and their fathers and their uncles and their grandfathers all had cholesterols at 280 and bad HDLs and high LDLs and so on. But most people can change their health with diet and exercise. What was your question? Yes, please. Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I mean, that's the cornerstone of the whole deal.
Thank you for being very inspiring tonight.
Thank you. Thank you. Better choices. That's what I tell 10-year-olds. I also tell them, when I want to take a kid off of cow's milk because he's got a cold, which, by the way, is not a proven intervention, obviously, but it makes sense. I say to him, well, instead of drinking cow's milk, I think what I like to do is I like to drink elephant's milk. And he laughs. And I say, well, why don't you drink elephant's milk? Is it because you're not an elephant, he says. Well, then, okay, then instead we'll drink some zebra milk. Finally, the kid gets it, and he said, well, I'm not a zebra. Well, why don't we drink some giraffe's milk? He said, I'm not a giraffe. I said, okay, well, we'll go home, we'll drink some cow's milk. The kid says, well, I'm not... And he gets stuck. Because it's a paradigm shift that you have to make. Drinking cow's milk isn't good for you. I'm not going to keep every kid, like I said, away from pizza forever. You know, but what you say is we have this once in a while. It shows up once in a while. It's not what we have every Tuesday and Thursday for dinner because we... Yes, please. Those are my hardest children.
My grandfather ate bacon.
You know, it happens. Everybody knows of a 96-year-old man who drinks bourbon twice a day and eats bacon, you know? And you know something? Most of the people who drink bourbon twice a day and eat bacon aren't alive to refute It was a great little, you know, the page, the one-page essay in Newsweek, My Turn. About 2 months ago, there was an article about somebody, written by somebody who said, we've just taken all the fun out of everything. When I rode in the car, there was no car seat in my generation. I rode on the back ledge of my dad's car. And we didn't wear helmets, and we sucked all the fun out of it. And I wrote a letter back, which I didn't publish, saying, there are dead people who aren't writing essays in Newsweek because they didn't wear a helmet on the bike and they didn't wear a seatbelt. It is no less fun to make a wonderfully healthy breakfast than to make a bacon and junkola breakfast for a kid. You know, kids love waffles and pancakes and oatmeal and fruit. And like I said, they like beans and they like talking about gas and they like biscotti, okay? Yes, please. I don't know. No, I don't think so. It's a soy formula has a tremendously screwy mineral mix to it. And they got away with it. They're kind of grandfathered in. I mean, they probably, you know, there's a lot of jokes about that. I mean, there are certain foods that you just couldn't introduce if you had to pass any kind of FDA muster. Yes. I know, because we're all worried about calcium, we're worried about getting a little more protein in, we like kids to have a white beverage to drink because everybody else is drinking a white beverage. You know, I won't take the extreme saying just you only drink water. You know, there's a lot of sugar in there too, by the way. If you look at most soy and rice milk, there's a lot of sugar. Yeah, it's, you know, but most kids don't like the unsweetened soy milk no matter how hard you try. But soy formula, I believe, has a funny mineral mix just because of the way it binds minerals. I'm not sure about that. Yes, please.
How do you help a child accept being a vegetarian without putting down,
like,
accepting other
people's meat? You teach him to be proud of it. You teach him to be proud of the fact that he's building bigger muscles and running faster because of the broccoli and so on. You teach him to be proud of it. You set the example. You explain things to him. Thank you. This is my prop again one more time. He's going to make a circuit. You teach him to be proud of it. You try to teach him not to be disdainful or to do as my daughter once saying, Dad, there's a dead chicken next to the birthday cake, she said. Yeah, honey, people are going to eat it. Watch this. You teach him to be proud, not disdainful. A little disdainful, maybe, of people who don't eat as well as he does, and you don't do what I did once, which, without thinking, when a little kid was telling me about his friend whose mother sent Lunchables to school with him every day, I said something like, mothers who really love their kids probably don't send Lunchables to school every day. Yeah, I know, I got a phone call. But you know what? I meant it. Don't be that lazy. I don't like, and again, to say it for the fourth time, do not put a smile on the kid's sandwich, okay? It's a sandwich. Eat it, don't eat it. You know, I mean, there's other stuff too if you don't like this sandwich. But Lunchables. You know, there's even official nutritional disdain for Lunchables, let alone, you know, the Center for Science and the Public Interest disdain, or mine. Yes, please. Yes. What I tell parents, because parents talk to me, they start talking at 4 or 5 months of age. They say, boy, every time we eat, he's just looking and he's reaching. And what I say is, put a piece of mud on your plate. Not only is the kid really interested in the mud on your plate, but he will eat the mud on your plate, which is, that's a sad thing to think about. What I tell him is that it's a medical issue. It's a medical issue. It's best for your kid not to eat a lot of cookies. It's best for your 6-month-old not to eat something that gets in the way of more breast milk. And it's a medical issue. That's all. I mean, we do not give in to a child's desire just to take a little bitty sip of our beer any more than we should give in to the child's desire to eat the food off of our plate when we know that the best thing would be to have breast milk for another month or two. For kids who have allergies, big family history of allergies or eczema or asthma, prolonged breastfeeding, as it's called, which is an absurd way of looking at it, prolonged breastfeeding, longer breastfeeding is medically crucial. these kids get fewer allergies, less eczema. Has anybody in the room ever seen a baby with bad eczema whose mother stopped drinking cow's milk and then the kid's eczema went away? I've seen it dozens of times. It looks like magic. It makes me look like some kind of, just like a genius. Not a genius, okay? Well, if I am, that doesn't reflect it. But what it is just simple science. Cow's milk antigens in breast milk create eczema. Look it up. So that's what I do. I just tell the parents that we should resist because it's medical. It's like breastfeeding. You know the most? Yes. Yep. Because they're too little. And by the way, I'm not necessarily saying to trust their instincts, because the kid's instincts will drive him to potato chips at age two. What I'm saying is, don't offer the potato chips. Don't say to the kid, I'm going to be eating potato chips, and they're going to be sitting in a bowl over there, but they're not good for you. Firstly, the hypocrisy is evident even to a two-year-old. And secondly, they eat the potato chips. Given a chance, they'll gravitate towards really bad food, but if offered good food, they'll eat that too. Yes, please.
Okay, so I'm going to do a picky question. But earlier you mentioned
Yeah.
stay away from the peanut butter. And I'm thinking, do you mean just Skippy or the natural peanut butter too? And
well, there's... There's
incremental increase
in nutritional value as you get better peanut butter, okay? Peanuts, firstly, have a fatty acid pattern which isn't good for us. I used to know the names of the fatty acids that aren't good for us in peanuts, but I've fortunately forgotten those. But the fatty acid pattern isn't good for us. There are actually fats in there that are toxic. Now, the quantity is small, so you're not going to eat a teaspoon of peanut butter, keel over, and die, but they're toxic. Peanuts, which are not stored properly, collect a toxic fungus. Peanuts which are not organically grown have a lot of pesticides. Now, moving beyond that to organic, clean, well-stored peanuts made into peanut butter, yeah, it's okay, but it's a lot of fat.
What's well-stored?
Well, I don't know. Stored in a mold-free environment. If they're... No, I'm talking about before it's processed. Before it's processed, the peanuts get moldy and the mold's not good for us. But you know what? I'm talking about fresh ground organic peanut butter. It's at some point you run out of things to feed your kid. And if the worst thing you do is use organic almond butter or maybe organic peanut butter, your kid's better off than 99% of the people in America, and therefore trying to drive you from the 99th percentile up to 99.9 is going to drive you crazy. Therefore, I will lighten up not just about peanut butter, I will lighten up about scrambled eggs from a free-range chicken. People get confused. They say, how could it be that different? How could the chicken fed this produce an egg that's different than the chicken fed this? And the simple analogy is, we got two red buildings. Okay, one of them produces automobile tires and the other one produces shoes. Pretty much depends on what you put into the two identical red buildings. If you feed a chicken a certain type of food, they put out eggs which are nutritionally almost worthless because they can't do anything about it. Yes, please.
Organic. Mm-hmm. Stuff costs about twice.
Yes,
and
it does.
And I know that in my group, I'm not going to tell moms it's okay because I want to.
I understand and have a fair amount of compassion for people who find foods take too big a dent out of their pocketbook. But you know what the deal is? You pay for it sooner or later. There is very clear evidence that the more pesticides you take in, the more likely you are to get sick later. And it's quite inapparent. The tomato might look the same. Actually, as you know, the organic tomato doesn't look quite as good as the bright red chemical-laden tomato. But you're going to pay later. So you know what you do? You do the best you can. You do the best you can. You don't listen to anybody who's telling you what a bad mother you are for feeding your kid broccoli. You're better off eating broccoli, carrots, and tomatoes that have been grown with pesticides than you are eating no broccoli, tomatoes and carrots. You're much better off. There's no doubt about that. Which is where everything went south, where people said, my God, if you can't get organic broccoli, don't eat broccoli. No, if you can't get organic broccoli, eat the other stuff because it's good enough for you. So say we all. More broccoli. But that's really hard, because I know. And you know what else we should all do whenever we can? Have a garden. You know, it doesn't have to be a half an acre in the backyard in your mansion in Beverly Hills. It can be a pot where you can grow a fair amount of lettuce, or six pots where you can grow some lettuce and teach a kid about tomatoes. You can do that in any part of the country, any country, differently in some parts of the country than in others. But you can do that and teach a kid more about vegetables. Now, that's not going to save you a lot of money if you got a garden that big, okay? But it helps. It also teaches a kid a little bit of respect and reverence for food. Yes, please. I don't know about coral calcium. I bookmarked that web page a half a dozen times and I still haven't read it. You know, there are a lot of sources of calcium which are contaminated. Remember, I mean the oyster shell calcium used to be terribly contaminated. You know, one of the most interesting articles of the past couple of weeks had to do with caopectate. Anybody read that? Caopectate has 50 times more lead than is allowed in anything else in the world. 50 times more. Aw, oops. By the way, it doesn't work either. So you know what they're recommending instead? What they switched over from that clay that had all the lead in it, they switched over to bismuth, I believe bismuth subsalicylate, which is the same thing found in Pepto-Bismol, which is related to aspirin, which we know isn't good for kids and doesn't work either. There are pills, there are pancreatic enzymes that were invented for overeating. And one of them I think it's still around. It's called Festal, F-E-S-T-A-L, Festal, like in festival. So that if you really want to overeat, you can take these extra enzymes. I don't think we have vomitoriums anymore. But instead we have Festal. I also tell the little kids that it'll be absolutely delightful when the scientists do discover that eating more macaroni and cheese and potato chips really is good for you. It's not going to happen. And the little kids get it when I tell them that peanuts or that cookies that you eat when nobody's looking still count. Yeah. Yes, please.
I was wondering if you have much experience with mothers who are pregnant or nursing with depression.
It's a good question. Eating well helps with depression. Eating more protein has been studied. As far as I know, there's nothing conclusive about it. But eating well helps. I mean, most women in the room have gone through some pretty interesting hormonal changes postpartum. In individuals prone to it, you get the extremes, which involve postpartum psychosis. But most women get some kind of postpartum blues, and you factor in decreased sleep and decreased ability to cook a 7-course meal for yourself or your family, and you end up with your body not working quite as well. I'm not aware that eating more protein really helps. You need some protein. You know, the balance in blood sugar depends upon the balance of what you eat. Because if you eat a diet that's exclusively carbohydrates, especially simple carbohydrates, you get rapid absorption, rise and fall. But if you eat, you know, a handful of raisins with your almonds, you get an evening out because the protein and the fat slow down the absorption, so the blood sugar curve is much smoother and your moods are much smoother. I once did another TV show where we did a live birthday party. Just to show, because most doctors will still tell you that sugar doesn't adversely affect a child's behavior, and we all know that it does. So what we did was we set up a birthday party at the beginning of the show where the kids had M&Ms and cake and just as much sugar as they could eat, and then we'd cut back and forth to it every 10 minutes, and we watched the deterioration in behavior. It was an effective show. There was no science behind it. We had no control. Should have had another room full of kids eating carrots, but that we couldn't recruit any volunteers for the carrots. A lot of volunteers for the M&Ms, though. Any other questions? Yes.
One of my favorite cookbooks is Good Foods for Great Kids.
That's
inside information on a second volume.
My wife's companion cookbook to my rigid, bad-selling book has just the nicest, simplest recipes. We are working on rewriting everything in our spare time. But, you know, I tell people that... Firstly, by the way, if you go to my website, I think my whole book is up on the website along with recipes. Somebody transcribed it for free onto the website. And you can have it. My website? My website is drjgordon.com, and it's all one word, drjaygordon, drjgordon.com. It's a very nice website. I have a partner who does all the work, and I just put my name on it. Yes, please, you with the spotted animal.
She wants to know about her brother who's seeming to show some signs of pre-puberty type stuff. And
how old is he? 10, yeah, yes.
And I just was wondering about that. I've seen it in other kids, and I don't know how normal
I got
have a weight gain.
I got, yes, your weight changes whether you're male or female. It gets distributed a little differently. And what I tell the kids, that whether it's 10, and it's a lot easier at age 12, I tell them your body is now set up with the right hormonal milieu to either form a lot of fat or a lot of muscle. And if you look in the locker room in 6th or 7th or 8th grade, a fair amount of people are forming breasts. The girls are very happy. The boys are not so happy that they're forming breasts. And that instead you could form biceps or breasts, it's your call. Yes, your weight changes a lot. And you know, that people wonder, I mean, why we have 6 and 7 and 8 year old girls who are beginning to menstruate, which is kind of tricky. Whether it has to do with hormones in chickens or, I don't know. And that's how people start to discredit the entire discussion when they tell you that it's because of chickens. We don't know if it's because of chickens. But it certainly has to do with, we also all know, we do know that girls who are overweight to a certain percentage do often do seem to enter puberty earlier. So there's a real nice double whammy. Not only are you the chubbiest of the fourth graders, but you also are having your period. It's not a good situation. Yes?
I was wondering about when kids say, when you say sugar's not good for you, they say, why can't you have some? Sometimes we don't know what to say.
You say that we're your mom and dad and we love you, and we know that if you eat lots of sugar, you end up with your teeth not being healthy, you end up with cavities, and your energy level isn't as good, and your body doesn't seem to fight the germs as well, so you get sick more often when you have sugar. And I tell the kids that you eat broccoli and carrots and you jump high, and if you eat a lot of sugar, you jump low, and I tell them maybe I'm stretching, but it's pretty close to the truth. And then sometimes you just say, because I said so. And it's the reason that, I mean, if it weren't for grown-ups, kids would eat a lot of candy. So you just say it's your teeth and your tummy and your muscles and your bones and running and jumping and we're playing soccer soon. And then what you do is you don't have it around. I mean, I truly believe that we should have no cheese in our house. Okay? Now, I'm not always successful in my own house. Okay, so I can't necessarily police your house completely. My wife likes a little Parmesan or salad, and maybe so do I, maybe. But what you do is you aim really high. You aim really high so that when you fall short, it tends to be once a week. Or when you fall short, it's with a peanut butter sandwich. It's not with chicken nuggets. Okay, it's not Kentucky Fried Grease Balls. It's with a peanut butter sandwich or a once a week, you know, omelet. Or when you dine out, you end up with food. You know, if you got a kid with a problem, and maybe some people in the room have a kid with a problem, you have to tell the waiter at breakfast, please do not bring the butter with the muffins. Matter of fact, we can do without the muffins. And when you bring the breakfast, do not bring the hash browns. I have that argument with the waiter all the time. What would you like instead of hash browns? Nothing. You want cottage cheese? No. Sliced tomatoes? Fine. Bring the sliced tomatoes. The main thing is I don't want the hash browns. Why don't I want the hash browns? Because if hash browns are there, you eat them. Okay? You order a fruit plate, they bring you french fries. French fries shouldn't come with a fruit plate, but they come. You know? It's the other thing I tell the kids, when you eat french fries off of somebody else's plate, that counts too. Nice try. Yes, please. I mean, if anybody wants to walk out, go ahead, because I mean, I could keep going for far too long. Plus, we need what?
Can we clap for you?
Well, you can clap, but I got one question. You can clap. Thank you very much. I clap for you, too. You have to work harder than I do, and I have to sit here and tell you these unrealistic things. You have to go do them. Yes, please. Where'd you grow up? Me too, except we called it Wisconsin. Yes?
Right. So, I've not been very successful lately, and one of the problems that I've been having is whenever we go over to my parents or my husband's parents' house,
yeah,
of course, to be polite, I eat what they serve. And I don't really want to eat that, but they're not tolerant or understanding. I've argued with them.
These are your parents or his parents?
I've argued with my parents. I've
Okay. Just being as nice as you can. And again, I'm not going to make the chocolate chip cookie for your kid a deal breaker. But I'll make the chicken a deal breaker. Okay. I mean, if you want to be a vegetarian or you want to eat a low fat diet, and they serve you greasy spare ribs, you can just say, you know what, we just don't, and we don't want you to serve. There is a fair amount of disrespect from one generation to the next for the way we raise our children, okay? They judge everything you do, whether it's breastfeeding for more than 2.5 hours, sleeping in the same bed, whatever you do, they often have a disrespect for it. There's a level of disrespect you do not have to tolerate, where you can just say, we don't eat that way, and we don't intend to feed our kids that way. Nor do we intend to skip Thanksgiving dinner and eat some junk with you and eat too much pie and throw up on your floor. But it just, I mean, it's really a frank discussion that is very difficult to have, and you'll have to have it at some point. And you might as well have it sooner rather than later. I mean, do they like you anyway?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good. Well, that's a start. That's a start. But it... Yeah, but you know, it's not weird. It's not weird to be a vegetarian. It's not weird to eat less meat or less cheese. I mean, that milk is like a Seinfeld joke. I mean, I wonder who the first person was who saw that big animal sitting out in the pasture and said, let's go sneak up on it and squeeze the stuff underneath, see what comes out, and let's drink it. Okay. And by the way, if we have any left over, let's put it aside for 6 months, let it get moldy and eat it. Okay? I mean, nutritionally, this wasn't good, clear thinking. But then economics took over. And now, I mean, you know what the government does with dairy products. Government heavily subsidized for decades the dairy industry because there was too much milk. So we would buy the cheese. We would buy the, we still do, we buy the extra cheese and we give it to people who don't have enough money to get adequate food and adequate health care, and they get sick and die. Okay? Which does help to control the poverty problem in America, but it's not the best way to do it, is to bump off those people with extra cheese. You know? I mean, instead we should, I mean, look at the WIC program. Do you know how long it was that the WIC program only gave out formula and had nothing to do with breastfeeding? And that was because we have a lot of dairy, a lot of milk. It's hard. I mean, but you also can develop a reputation and take pride in it. I'm a vegetarian. I'm coming to dinner at your house and I can't wait, and you don't have to worry about me because I like salad and pasta. People say to me, well, what do you eat? I say, I have never had trouble getting salad and pasta in any city in the world. Okay, I can go without protein for a few days if I'm traveling. I'll have salad and pasta. Everybody has beans. Tell them not to go to a lot of trouble. And you don't mind if people are eating chicken around you, but your kids don't eat that. I mean, those of us in the room who still try very hard to deprive our children of cookies and candy bars, I mean, you explain, look, if my kid had diabetes, you wouldn't say, hey, you know, shake it off, walk it off, and, you know, let him have one candy bar. No, you don't understand. If he eats a candy bar, he goes away. So we don't give him a candy bar. Okay? Now, your kid doesn't have diabetes, but instead your child has other issues, like wanting to eat healthily and grow up healthily, or wanting not to be obese.